Hello, welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Coping with Cancer. And today's program is supported by the Anna Fuller Fund, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, this program has about 250 participants on the program itself. And we have participants from all over the world, actually, as well as the global participants, as well as participants from the U.S. And I just want to mention the countries that are participating today that have signed up for this program. We have Canada, Colombia, Egypt, Estonia, India, Iran, Kuwait, Lebanon, Mexico, Oman, Pakistan, the Philippines, Romania, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. So truly, this is a global call. And it's really a credit to all of you that you have chosen to spend this next hour with us. Really my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Michael Wong, and Dr. Wong is Physician in Chief, Roswell Park Cancer Institute. And Dr. Wong will be addressing how to cope while waiting for test results from cancer workup, managing cancer when you have other health problems, the impact of chronic illness on cancer treatment. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Wong.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. It is indeed a privilege and a pleasure to be with you today to share information about the topic at hand and to be part of this august faculty. Getting the diagnosis of cancer is an absolute gut-wrenching, terror-inducing situation, and I fully understand how any sort of delay in getting to a definitive plan becomes one in which anxiety is at its highest. I'm going to give you the key to this now and repeat it at the end, which is the fact that communication is the key to all to many of the things that we are the problems that come up in this time span. So, what do I mean by that? When you first get the diagnosis of cancer, just the first step. There's so much that has to be done in order for a plan to be developed. And so waiting for the necessary testing and imaging studies to be done is part of the workup. Why? Because that gives you things like staging, how much cancer is involved, where the cancer is involved, and that is absolutely essential to develop a definitive plan. Oftentimes these days, the treatment of cancer is very personalized. It is not just one size fit all, but we try to find a therapy that fits that individual person's cancer. That means doing things like testing at a genetic level. We call that molecular testing. When we look at the genes, the mutations, and the alterations in that cancer's DNA, which is characteristic to that person, and we are now at the point where there are precision medicines that target specific DNA mutations, and it's to the person's benefit, the patient's benefit, to know what that is. There's also the issue that the most important person in your care, in the cancer patient's care, is not even in the room. It's actually the pathologist who looks through the specimens. And so we oftentimes in many of the academic centers will relook at the specimens, the biopsy, to make sure we have exactly the diagnosis that we have. The subtleties in what we see under a microscope is also important in staging and prognosis. For example, in my specialized area of skin cancer, how many fractions of a millimeter that the cancer has penetrated into the underlying structure is actually part and parcel of the staging and the prognosis. Very important. And if you're having symptoms in the interim, this is the time to make sure you know how to get hold of your team, which speaks to the first thing I told you. Communication is key. So in this craziness, while everything's happening, before we have a plan and you just got the diagnosis, make sure you know how to get hold of your team. If you have symptoms, and what I'm thinking of is discomfort or pain, it's important to communicate this back to your team so they understand it and can help you with medicines to alleviate it. So that's important. Make sure you know how to get hold of people. Make sure you know you have an appointment to come back, right? Make sure you know when that appointment is. And if for some reason you can't make it, or snowstorm, hurricane, ice, flat tire, doesn't matter what, make sure you know how to reschedule that quickly, right? So the other topic is how do you manage cancer and other health problems? Many of us come to this cancer diagnosis when we're older, and we have other things that are in our health history. We call these comorbidities, other things that are impacting you. Examples include diabetes or high blood pressure, inflammatory conditions, arthritis, right? Allergies are incredibly important because many of these drugs and drugs we use for supportive care, can interact with other things. And of course, your medications that you're on, very important. In fact, for me, I ask my patients to bring their pill bottles with them. I want to read it right off the bottle. In my own family, when my father was sick, we have a doctor, a nurse, and a pharmacist. And guess what? We can't get the medications right all the time, which is embarrassing. So no harm in bringing your medicines with you so the doctor knows. I also want to talk a little bit about the impact of chronic illness on cancer treatment. Chronic illness means an issue or a health condition that you have had for a period of time, before the diagnosis of cancer. You know, you may have had it in your own mind forever, but these are important things. And we talked about some of them just a few minutes ago, which is the issue of diabetes and hypertension, things like that. But other things are important. Here's an example. If you have chronic arthritis, important to bring that to the doctor's attention because I found out some of my patients can't even open the pill bottle because they all have these safety caps, which are impossible to open. But if you let the doctor know, we can make an exception and give you easier to open caps. We have some packaging, blister packs, which are incredibly tough to open because it protects the pills inside from moisture, from heat, from whatever. And again, you have to realize that these are difficult to open, and just be aware that sometimes you might need help to get to lay out your pills for the time that you need them. Lastly, we use a lot of electronics. We have portals and things like that go through and use computers and smartphones. And remember, if your vision is an issue, if your hearing is an issue, if your ability to use devices is an issue, this is an example of a chronic illness that can impact your care. I'm coming to the end of my time, but I want to point out that if all this is happening, the most important thing is communication, right? Communicating with your team, letting them know what's happening, and there's no such thing as dying of embarrassment. And if any time you feel like you need to be more proactive and you have things of concern, write it down. Write it down. Show it to the doctor, the healthcare team. Right. Make sure you get answers to those issues. I'll stop here by repeating the first thing I said, which is communication is the key, and to make sure you know how to get hold of your healthcare team as needed. I'll stop here and return the session back to Dr. Messner. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wong. That was a stellar presentation. Excellent, really. And you set the stage for today's program because you're the first speaker, first of all. So I thank you for that, and I know there'll be questions later on, and thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is actually her own healthcare team. She's a doctor of public health, a master's in social work, and an RN. And Dr. Palos is the former clinical protocol Administration Manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in healthcare disparities, caregiving, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing managing the emotional, social, practical, and financial issues of coping with cancer, the importance of adherence, taking a treatment on schedule, and knowing when to call your healthcare team between appointments. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Paulos.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to share this time with all of you. And Dr. Messner, thank you for the invitation to join this esteemed panel of experts. A key point, and I was so glad to hear Dr. Wong, our first speaker, emphasize this throughout his time. A key point in today's discussion centers on the critical role of communication between the patient, caregiver, and cancer care team. Effective communication is paramount throughout the cancer journey, especially during clinic visits with your team. Now, we all know that our nation's healthcare delivery system is constantly changing, but fortunately for now, the model of care supports a patient-centered approach. So this shift has enabled us to spend more time looking at the value of managing the emotional, practical, and financial issues related to this disease. Now, all of us on this call understand the cancer experience affects multiple elements of a patient's life. Today, I'm focusing on the practical, emotional, social, and financial issues. Throughout my discussion, I'll share some tips to help our callers manage these aspects of the experience. And some of these tips may be helpful to patients, caregivers, and even our healthcare providers. So let me begin with this question. If someone were to ask you which one of these three areas, that is the practical, emotional, financial, concerns you the most at this moment, at this very moment on this call, what would your answer be? And would that answer to that question differ from what it would have been yesterday or what it will be next month? Most likely, many of you would agree that the answers would differ across the trajectory of the cancer experience. So how do a patient and their family navigate the practical, emotional, and financial effects? So let's begin with the practical issues, which again may vary in importance over time, but always must be addressed. So here's a few tips I'd like to share. Number one, realize that dealing with this disease will be a lifelong learning experience. That is, learning about the nuances and changes of cancer begins with the initial doses or diagnosis and continues throughout the life of the patient. So kind of get yourself a t-shirt or something and say, I am a lifelong learner. But that is something that will be a benefit to you, your family, and your providers. Second, know who the members of your healthcare team are. Now, this can be daunting sometimes because you have so many folks coming in and out during the clinic visit. But rest assured that each member, the physicians, the nurses, the nutritionists, the physical therapists, the social workers, and many, many, many others have a purpose and role in providing a safe and optimal treatment plan for you. A third thing that would be helpful is to map out the key members of your family or personal support team and let your team know who these individuals may be. So, for example, who's going to be your caregiver at home or who is your primary communicator during your appointment? And then the last one is understand the importance of keeping to your schedule for appointments and medications. It makes a difference in your physical, emotional, and even financial outcomes. And these outcomes would apply to patients and caregivers' quality of life. So let's move on to the emotional impact of cancer on the patient and their family. Now, once a cancer diagnosis is made for a family member, a ripple effect occurs, affecting the family and the friends and anyone else in the patient's life. This ripple can increase patient and caregiver burden. So what can you do? And you can do this as a patient, you can do this as a caregiver or a healthcare provider. A first step is to ask or identify the resources for mental health. You can begin by talking with someone you can trust on your team. Again, perhaps that particular team member can navigate you to a mental health professional, such as a social worker, psychologist, or psychiatrist. Another option is to learn and practice self-care strategies. These would include like massage, meditation, even acupuncture, and energy balancing activities such as dietary and nutritional advice and exercise regimens. Now, we'll hear more about our nutrition and hydration and resources from our other speakers on the panel. Now, I'd like to move on to the most stressful factors in the cancer journey. In my opinion, it's the financial burden that's surrounding a patient's diagnosis, treatment, and post-treatment phases. Again, we see a ripple effect, but this time it's mainly experienced by the patient and their family. This ripple effect can contribute to stress, anxiety, anger, frustration, and even physical burdens such as sleep disturbances or extreme fatigue. And that goes back to why it's helpful to talk about the needs that you have from an emotional perspective. One thing that's important, it's critical to learn and understand your insurance benefits and coverage. This information is going to influence the cost of care, treatment, and out-of-pocket expenses. Your insurance coverage will even determine where you may receive treatment. Is it going to be a community hospital, a local oncology clinic, a cancer center, or a public or safety net facility? If you haven't already, and I have just gone through this with a family member, if you haven't already, gather your paperwork related to any insurance plans you may have. Employment-related health insurance, supplemental insurance, such as Medicare and Medicaid, or long-term care policies, and keep these papers readily available and this information. You don't want to be scrambling at the last moment trying to get these papers together, especially if your loved one is in the hospital and you're at home trying to do this on your own. Occasionally, the income is lost due to the patient's or caregiver's loss of employment. It's good to find out about possible sources for financial aid. Some hospitals, cancer centers, grants, or patient advocacy groups may be sources of financial assistance. Begin this process as early as possible, even if you believe it's unnecessary. Cancer is a long-term, chronic disease and can be costly. Explore all your options just in case. Well, we heard Dr. Wong talk a bit about the importance of keeping a schedule for your medications, for your treatment plans, for your appointments. In healthcare, this is called adherence, and it refers to how a patient follows the provider's directions and recommendations. Now, at times it may be difficult, and this could be for several reasons. For example, the patient may not want to take the medication for personal or religious beliefs. The patient is unable to obtain the medications because they're too costly. The insurance perhaps is not covering the medications. And in some areas, such as rural or underserved communities, the medication may not be accessible or available. But you know what? Patients and their caregivers are often reluctant to talk about these challenges with their providers. And I'd like to encourage all of you in this call to talk about any barriers a patient may face in adhering to treatment appointments or procedures. Remember, and you heard this over and over again, communicate, communicate, communicate. So I'll just to wrap up, I'll share a few suggestions. Again, become familiar and comfortable with your cancer care team. Ask each provider for the best way to contact them between appointments. And do they prefer messages through MyChart? Can a telephone call be made to key providers, including a clinic nurse or advanced provider? It's helpful to ask the team member, who should you contact in case of emergencies or questions that may come up after your visit? And maybe it's not an emergency, but just some questions about medications and so on. Discuss what their protocol is for emergencies. It may be slightly different for each provider or facility. And again, do this as early as possible. It will save you from scrambling for this information at the last moment. One of the biggest challenges of the cancer journey is knowing what a good quality of life means to an individual. Quality of life means different things to different people, and it's highly probable that quality of life will also change over the various cancer phases. A cancer diagnosis often causes individuals to reflect on their lives and their meaning. This response may have a positive or negative influence on the lives of the patient and those of their family. So remember, be kind to yourself. There are times that you will need to take a day at a time or even an hour at a time, and that's okay. So I appreciate you listening to me, and thank you again for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. And Dr. Messner, I'd like to return the program back to you, please.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Paulus. That was just a wonderful presentation, stellar, with so much information that people need to have. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so more to come. That's, thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Paulus. And our next speaker is Dr. Emma Carroll. And Dr. Carroll is nurse practitioner, supervised supportive care services, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Carroll will be addressing key questions to ask your healthcare team, quality of life concerns, the role of a physical therapist in helping you cope with cancer, and the role of clinical trials, how research increases your treatment options. And so I will now turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Carroll.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. And I'll say, you know, a lot of the things I'll be talking about now were echoed by my colleagues earlier in this talk, and I hope that emphasizes just how important they are. But we'll start with some key questions to ask your healthcare team. Once you're diagnosed with cancer, it's essential to make your voice heard and ask questions about both the diagnosis and the treatment plan. So to start, finding out the exact cancer that you've been diagnosed with and what stages it is essential. And this will also lead to a discussion about the recommended treatment plan that will be offered and alternative options that may be available. It's important to be curious about what the care team is offering and why they feel it's the best option for you. There's so much power in curiosity and in you know, wanting to have knowledge about what's going on. And if you are exploring alternative therapies, make sure that you have a good understanding about the costs or benefits of each treatment so that you can make an informed decision. Keep in mind that your healthcare team will have a lot of information about your cancer diagnosis, but very little information about who you are and what your priorities are. Helping your providers understand who you are as a whole person and not just a diagnosis is essential for establishing a collaborative relationship and treatment plan. Another question you may wish to explore has to do with what the goal of the treatment is. Very often, it can be much more complicated than just trying to eliminate the cancer completely. Because of that, you may want to talk about if the goal of the treatment is curative or if it falls somewhere on the spectrum of outcomes. When a treatment plan is decided, asking about the risks associated with the treatment can also be helpful when trying to set expectations. If or when these side effects occur, this knowledge may allow you to identify them earlier before they become more difficult to manage or reverse. And on that note, some side effects may need to be addressed before treatment even starts, particularly with therapies that can affect fertility. So it's important to educate yourself on these before starting the treatment. You'll also need to know who the members of your healthcare team are, as this was echoed by some of my colleagues, and how to communicate with them. It is so essential. This is so that during treatment, you know how to update your team with questions and concerns that may arise. Again, knowledge is power. And the last thing you want to do is feel like you're scrambling to find out how to communicate with your care team when an unexpected or urgent need occurs. You want to feel like you already have this information and you know how to handle that situation. So moving on to quality of life concerns and how physical therapy can help you cope with your cancer. So the use of physical therapy, or PT, as sometimes you'll hear it referred to, during your cancer treatment, it can really depend on your diagnosis and your course of treatment. As someone who works in an inpatient setting, I often see PT used to evaluate the level of an individual's level of activity or debility. They can also be helpful in determining what the safest discharge option is for patients when they're ready to leave the hospital. But in the outpatient setting, physical therapy helps patients stay strong throughout their treatment and helps improve their quality of life by maintaining their baseline level of activity the best they can. They can also help address side effects of some treatments, which can include pain, swelling, fatigue, numbness and tingling, just to name a few. Your physical therapist will work with you to determine how they can best help you and support you with an individualized program based on your needs and symptoms. It's often essential in assisting to improve quality of life when undergoing cancer treatment and even after as well. I'll touch on clinical trials briefly and how research can help increase your treatment options. So clinical trials help to develop new cancer medications and other strategies to help treat and prevent disease. They can also help find ways to improve quality of life in persons with cancer by exploring ways to manage these side effects of the cancer itself and its treatments. Clinical trials are essential for improving the way we treat cancer and how people live with cancer. Medical advancements are made because of the individuals who choose to participate in these studies. It is essential for advancement. Although the main goal of clinical trials is to gain knowledge about new treatments or procedures, they can also be an opportunity for people to gain access to treatments before they're widely available. Sometimes, not always though, these treatments can have the potential for being even more beneficial than the current standard of practice. It all depends on the purpose of the study and the phase of the study, but that can be very exciting. Clinical trials are not just for those actively undergoing cancer treatment. There's also a broad spectrum of studies that can be conducted for those who are cancer survivors as well. Survivorship is a very important area of study, and we're seeing it more and more now, especially as we become better at treating cancer and keeping people alive longer. Understanding how to live your best life after cancer has become an essential area of study. I'll turn it back over to Dr. Messner now.
Thank you, Carol, that was an outstanding presentation, really stellar. Lots of information, and there'll be lots of questions to you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian at the Michael DeBakey VA Medical Center. And Ms. Bearden will be addressing the role of the oncology dietitian and nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. My pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. So nutrition and hydration are key to the tolerance to treatment and providing your body the energy to do the things that you enjoy. Nutrition plans will vary from patient to patient, and this is because each patient's an individual. There's a lot of other health challenges patients are dealing with, and those are individual to them. The disease they're about to start treating is unique to them, and their treatment plans are unique to them. So really understanding, we've heard today many times over, knowing what your cancer diagnosis is, understanding your treatment plan is very important because it's individual to you. Also, knowing how to reach out to all the members of your healthcare team. We've heard that today as well. Each person on your healthcare team is here to support you in a different way. And so knowing who they are and knowing how to reach them is very important. Now, the dietitian is part of your healthcare team, and the dietitian is important because all of us are important, but one of the roles of the reasons that the dietitian is here is because there's so much information about nutrition and cancer out there. It can feel very overwhelming. Some of them are very extreme and they're not evidence-based. They can even be dangerous, some of them that are out there for following them. It's just confusing. It sounds really good. A lot of people will claim that the diet's going to cure them of cancer. And so people can get lost in some of this information. The dietitian can really help kind of clean that up for you, answer questions, give explanations why one thing might be right for you and another one might be not. But the dietitian is going to give you an individualized plan that's right for you, considering all your health concerns, so that you're safe and that you tolerate your treatment well and you get the nutrition that you need. So your nutrition plan can actually change throughout your treatment just based on your side effects, maybe your response to treatment, maybe your treatment plan changes and there's some other goals that the team is working with you on. And so your diet may need to change because of that. And a lot of times family and friends will reach out with the best of intentions. And so it can just feel a lot at times and overwhelming. Diet can be one of those things people feel the most control with because it's something they're doing in their home and in their private life. And so this can really be a topic that people want a lot more information on and how to make it individualized. nourishment is always the goal. So when you meet with your dietitian, that's the overall arching goal. We want to nourish your body to help it function optimally. And in order to do that, we want to avoid unintentional weight loss by eating enough calories and protein to maintain your hydration. Occasionally I'll meet a patient and they'll say, gosh, I have weight to lose. I don't need to worry about this. I'd like to lose about 40 pounds through this treatment. And I always tell them, no, this isn't the right time, because our bodies are going through a lot of changes with cancer treatment. And it's not working like it did before cancer treatment. And so there are some goals that we have to focus on, such as maintaining your lean muscle mass, making sure that we're nourishing you to keep your immune system functioning well, avoid weakness, avoid muscle loss. Loss of muscle can actually increase your risk of falls. It can increase your weakness. It can make you more fatigued. It can even delay wound healing and potentially delay treatment, just depending on what's going on. Believe it or not, if you're overweight, you can still become malnourished. So when nutrition needs aren't met, I kind of talked a minute ago about how it can result in loss of lean muscle mass and some other things. And muscle's really important. I want to bring people's attention to a few things. Our muscles control so much of how our body functions. It's about our breathing. It takes muscles to inhale and exhale. It takes muscles to swallow. It takes muscles to speak and chew, getting up out of chairs, moving around. And muscle doesn't take as much energy to break down. So when you're not eating enough calories and you're losing weight, your body is conserving calories. So it's going to go after a source that's already there that doesn't require a lot of energy to get access to. Fat takes several hours to break down, so your body doesn't want to use a bunch of energy breaking down something that takes a lot more time and a lot more energy. So the muscle is the kind of the first place our body goes for energy. That's why it's so very important that the weight goals and weight management are something that you're understanding. You know what your weight is. You talk with your healthcare team and, you know, meet with your dietitian to make sure that you have that individualized plan. We're actually healing throughout cancer treatment, believe it or not. The cancer can destroy a lot of cells, good and bad, and our nutrition helps rebuild those cells and those tissues, and our body needs that in order to succeed and do well. And so just so many things when it comes to nutrition and how nourishment is so vital. Hydration is something that sometimes gets lost in the mix, and hydration really helps everything. You know, we're pretty much, oh, I think it's 80-something% made of water. And so without enough water, things just don't work the same. When you're dehydrated, it can actually increase some of the side effects you may experience, like nausea, vomiting, fatigue. It can make you feel dizzy and lightheaded. And fluids, anything that's liquid at room temperature, so water, milk, fruit juices. A general guideline is most people need about 8 to 10 8-ounces of glasses of fluid a day, but some treatments may increase the fluid need. And so again, talk with your healthcare team and your dietitian about your meal plan to see what's best for you. If you're struggling in certain ways, keep a record. This really helps us help you and get you back on track. It also helps us understand when things are going on that maybe aren't as obvious. And so it really gives us a lot of information, believe it or not. So again, knowing your healthcare team, reaching out to them, and getting your individualized care plan on all aspects of your care is going to be the most optimal thing to help you succeed. I'm going to close with that, and I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Erden. That was just a stellar, wonderful presentation. And, of course, food is so important, and hydration as well. And I know there'll be questions to you in the Q&A as well. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is former founding director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, now part of Mount Sinai Health System. And Dr. Fleischman is also an author and researcher in oncology. And Dr. Fleischman will be discussing creating the right care plan for you, including scheduling appointments and follow-up care, reducing harmful drug interactions, and guidelines for care for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's really my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you for all the wonderful information that we've heard so far. I'd like to reiterate that communication really is just about the most important aspect of getting through this that we all know about. So we highly, highly recommend that you're comfortable both speaking to your treatment team and knowing who to ask what sometimes can be very helpful. Creating the right schedule for your care is a very variable, and it depends upon many different things. Are you being treated in private offices where some care is given in one place and some care is given in another place? You may have 5 or 6 different locations where your care is given, and figuring out how to get from place to place and if there's enough time to get from place to place seems kind of trite, but it is really important because you need to be at those appointments. And some of them, of course, may be telehealth. But it also depends upon what treatment you're getting. Some surgeries these days are done fully as an outpatient. And if you live far away from the surgical center where you're having your initial surgery, then you may need a place to stay close by, in a hotel or other places that the cancer center may have access to. There are a number of the larger cancer centers actually have agreements with inns or hotels to be able to house patients during their treatment. During chemotherapy, the scheduling can get even more intense because often you need to go in for tests in between your treatments. The treatments need to be on a certain day. There are very few that have to be the exact day. There's usually a little time, but again, it depends upon exactly the treatment that you're getting, whether there's some wiggle room and you could have the treatment the day or two before or a day or two after, or you need to speak with your team and figure that out. Radiation is really a whole other set of appointments. You have an initial consultation. There's a dry run where positions of the machinery and the position that you sit in or lie down in is practiced without any radiation at all, just with plain old light to make sure that everything is in place for the time you start your treatment. Follow-up care is somewhat different for each of those types of treatments, so it really depends upon what you're actually getting. So it is complex, and we often advise for those of you who are not that comfortable with technology, use a plain old calendar with boxes on it, and you write in what things have to be done on a certain day, what appointments have to be done, whether they're in person or on the telephone or online through a telehealth system. But you can organize your time like that so that there are no conflicts and you'll be able to be where you need to be and get the care that you have. So scheduling these there may be a scheduler, a single scheduler for in the larger cancer centers where there's somebody who's knowledgeable about all the departments who generally work under one roof are scheduled by that individual. And again, with a piece of paper, or if you're computer savvy, on your phone, in a complex electronic calendar, whatever you feel the most comfortable with. But there may be one person. There may be a variety of different people if your treatments are scattered over various offices. So again, having them have access to that. Some patients will even open up the calendar to the scheduler so the scheduler can access their calendar and be able to put things in after discussing them with you and your family. So scheduling really depends upon what your treatment is and where you're getting it and how often you have to get it. And follow-up is really essential. Follow-up may be with one of the medical, surgical, or radiation oncologists, or it actually may be by your primary care doctor. It depends, and lots of information needs to be transferred to and from those different providers. A lot of the follow-up care is often done by advanced practice nurses. Again, very familiar with your cancer and your treatment if they work with the team. So they are certainly maybe sometimes the best person to ask to find out, you know, information so that they can figure out who you need to speak with if it's someone else, or they would know the information themselves. The complex things, as Dr. Complex things that can occur are when you have other illnesses. And at times, one of the oncologists, the surgeon, medical oncologist, or the radiation oncologist will actually want to be the point person for that. Sometimes not, and your primary care doctor, and even there are some insurance companies who want the primary care doctor to be the place you go to find out who to ask questions to and who to get treatment from. There are some insurance companies that will actually appoint one of the oncologists as your temporary primary care doctor during the treatment. It really depends upon the kind of cancer, where you're treated, and how your insurance works with that group of providers. So it can be very daunting at first, and finding out what the rules are, as you heard, and following them logically can really make the most sense. Many times, if you do have other illnesses, like a heart problem, let's say, your medical oncologist, surgical oncologist, or radiation oncologist will want a cardiologist involved who is familiar with cancer, familiar with the treatment you're getting, that may be in the place that you're getting treatment or out in the community, but they will be the ones to direct you to someone who they share cases with, share patients with, and have knowledge about the cancer and its treatment as it affects other organ systems and other parts of the body. Not just heart, it could be your eyes, it could be your skin, it could be your lungs. I mean, it could be just about any other organ system. And there's a lot to manage here. So sometimes a trusted family member or a friend really needs to help out. Dr. Messner asked to talk a little bit about telehealth visits. This is a phenomenon that really only became popular after the COVID pandemic hit the world. So it is possible that some of your visits may be on regular telephone or may be online, on computer. They may be audio only, or they may actually have a video component. If you're going to have a telehealth visit, work with the office staff from the provider's office to find out how you do this. Do they call you? Do you call them? Is there a special program or an app to get into the platform, the system where this happens? Having your device fully charged, having a place to do the visit that's quiet and has electricity so you can plug your device in, it's very helpful. Having a list of questions beforehand, whether you have an in-person visit or a telehealth visit, can be very helpful. And we debate greatly about all the different ways that the world has changed since COVID, but this may be actually an advantageous change for many people, because it used to be that if you needed or wanted a family member or friend to come to your appointments who may be knowledgeable or who may be a good note taker or can ask good questions, they would often have to travel to you, to the place you live or the place that you're getting treated, so they can be physically present at the appointment. Now, with everybody's permission and understanding, that individual can be connected to the call, and it's just like they're there as much as you are. And that can be very helpful if your reliable source of help lives in another part of town or another city or another state or even another country, as long as they have internet access and everybody is aware that that individual is joining the call. So that can be very, very helpful to you. Dr. Wang described a little bit about the issue of getting results from lab tests, from pathology reports, from imaging studies, imaging means x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, sonograms, anything that any technology that produces some sort of a visual picture of what's happening in one part of your body. Because of the new privacy and confidentiality laws that have been passed in the United States and are available in other countries as well, and different depending upon the country. Sometimes these reports are visible to you before your providers ever have a chance to look at them, and they can be very frightening. They can be very frightening because there's a lot of jargon. They can be very frightening because some of the parameters, some of the results may be outside of the normal range of the parameters that are printed, and they're supposed to be. So if you may not understand them, you probably won't. Even medical and nursing colleagues often have some trouble with this unless you're working a lot in oncology, because this is really specialized work. So please don't jump to the wrong conclusions. Instead of starting to worry that something is wrong, which may actually be okay, please speak with your provider's office often, your oncologist, your oncology nurse, a physician's assistant, an advanced practice nurse, the dietitian, the physical therapist, someone in that practice or someone who they have that you're seeing as part of the treatment team will be the best person to explain this to you. So if you see these reports, get help in reading them if you're really uncertain about exactly what they mean, because you can jump to the wrong conclusions, which could cause way more distress than necessary. So just be careful about that. It has caused a lot of distress amongst people who are not used to reading these reports. So it is a kind of a new territory for all of us to be in, both the digital online world as well as in the in-person world, but there are certainly advantages and disadvantages to this, whether it's a telehealth visit or open notes. And I'll just say one more thing. We were talking about side effects and making sure that your providers know exactly what you're taking, especially that includes vitamins and supplements, even specialized teas. And often the dietitian and the pharmacist, if you're, again, being treated in one of the larger centers where there are specialized oncology pharmacists, are very familiar with all the things that don't mix well together. So make sure that they are involved if you have access to them, or if your providers have a question, they have someone to call. But they need to know exactly what you're taking, even if you think it's inconsequential, even if it's a specialized tea, because that can interact with some of the other medications you're taking, or the chemotherapy you're taking, or even affect how the radiation is absorbed by your body, or how well you'll heal, or how fast you'll heal from surgery. So everybody needs to know these things. With that, I will stop and turn the call back over to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman. That was a stellar presentation, very comprehensive, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. And actually, before we go to the Q&A, I'm just going to say a few words about Cancer Care Services. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization. We provide a host of services provided by oncology social workers throughout the country. And so what are those services? So we do offer both practical, financial, and co-payment assistance. And we also offer a number of online support groups that are available to people nationally. We also provide, we have a HOPE line, 1-800-813-4673 for people in the United States. You can call that number and speak with one of our oncology social workers. Usually people call with a particular question, and then the social worker answers the question and then goes over all the other services that they can access. And you can access cancer care services, all of them, by going to www.cancercare.org. And now we're going to go right to the Q&A, and we're going to take as many of your questions as possible. So, Sarah, if you could explain to everybody how to queue up the questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So a question for generally less out-of-pocket chemotherapy, co-pay or co-insurance administered hospital or oncologist office.
So the question is, are the co-pays different in the oncologist office or at the hospital? I think that depends. I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, but it depends upon how that office, is it an office in Is the chemotherapy being given in an infusion room at a hospital that has a federal program to give reduced cost chemotherapy, or is it in an office where they don't participate in a program like that? There are certain fees that are called facility fees in the United States for some insurance that are applied only to offices and infusion suites that are in the hospital or on the hospital campus, but not outside. So if you have questions about that in one of the practices, ask to speak with either the office manager or someone who knows exactly what the financial arrangements are. And because we do speak about the issue of financial toxicity and making sure that you can afford your treatment, maybe that's something to do earlier in the treatment rather than later. Maybe at the initial consultation, if you're going to be treated at that center, or even right afterwards on the telephone, speaking to someone in charge of the office, an administrator or an office manager, will get you to the right person who can explain your benefits, what kind of facility they are, and what that means to you in real life as far as any deductibles or copays.
Thank you. And for Dr. Carlos, what type of screening tools do you suggest to evaluate the social, emotional, practical, and financial issues? What are your thoughts on the NCCA distress thermometer? Dr. Carlos?
Dr. Messner, would you repeat the question, because it kind of broke up a bit?
What type of screening tools do you suggest to evaluate the social, emotional, practical, and financial issues?
Okay. Thank you.
NCCA distress thermometer.
So that's a good question, and there's a couple of ways to answer that. First of all, it will depend too on which healthcare team member you're speaking to. I know that there are different, what they call validated instruments, that they can look at each aspect or each dimension of the social, emotional, and financial. So if you speak to your team and say you'd like to have, you know, talk to somebody about those areas and could you be assessed, they may bring a paper or a couple of papers that ask you questions about, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling blue? Those kinds. So try to get to some aspect of it, of the emotional. Then they'll ask about, you know, financial. Do you feel like you're having financial hardships? Do you find yourself worrying about finances? And then social. Do you feel lonely? Do you feel isolated? So those types of instruments are screening tools that can be used by your team to really get an overall idea of what's going on with all of those dimensions of quality of life. Now, if you just want to keep it a bit more informal, you can ask those type of questions. If you're the caregiver, ask them of the patient, you know, how are you feeling today? What's going on? So some of those conversations are difficult between the patient and the caregiver, because the patient doesn't want to worry the caregiver doesn't want to stress out the patient. But again, you've heard the theme throughout all of today's discussion, communicate. Now is not the time to, you know, think about, like I think someone said, embarrassment. Don't worry about that. Fear that somebody's going to get upset or be hurt. They, you know, if you don't have open, honest communication, that's going to cause even more problems and increase the burden of those areas that you asked about. I know that was a long response, but there's just so much that can come into that question. But I hope that helped.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Collins. And a question for Ms. Bearden. What are some good sources of protein, getting enough protein? I find it difficult to get enough.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And sometimes it is for patients, they struggle with the protein. So great sources of protein are things like cottage cheese, Greek yogurt, real cheese like cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese, those types of things. Also eggs, milk, any kind of meat or fish are all really great sources of protein. Whenever somebody's struggling getting protein, and I encourage them to do small, frequent meals throughout the day, no more than about a handful initially, and then every 2 to 3 hours going back to eat something. Something room temperature or cold is oftentimes better tolerated. So things like chicken salad, tuna salad, egg salad, deviled eggs, the yogurt, the cottage cheese, you can get those mozzarella cheese sticks, and just eat a couple of cheese sticks, come back a couple of hours, take a couple of scoops of maybe a chicken salad or a tuna salad, and just the frequency. A lot of times patients are just feeling overwhelmed because appetite changes have started to surface. Maybe they're just low on energy. Maybe their taste has changed. So those are things that a dietitian can definitely talk with you about if there's some other complementary challenges you're having that maybe are interfering with eating enough protein. They can also help sort of address those as well.
Thank you. And Dr. Carroll, where can I find more information about clinical trials near me?
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit at the end. Was it about clinical trials?
Yes. Where can I find more information about clinical trials near me?
Wonderful. So I think there's two wonderful resources because you won't find the information in all in one place. If you're in the United States, looking at, government websites can be a great resource, like the NIH. But I would recommend going straight to your oncologist or, members of your care team and saying, hey, I'm interested in the clinical trial. What information do you have? That would be my best advice because they typically have the most information and they know the most about your disease and your treatment and would have a better understanding of what you'll be a good candidate for. So I would say go straight to the source, talk to your oncologist, talk to your care team, see what their advice is, and that's where I would start.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'm going to ask all of our speakers to provide a takeaway for today's program with Dr. Collins.
Well, I'd like to share this message with all of our callers, the patients, caregivers, and family members, and our healthcare providers. It's okay to take time for yourself and do what is necessary for you. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel like you're neglecting someone. I guess sometimes people just don't feel that they deserve that time for themselves. Self-care is important. And if you take the time for self-care, then you and those around you will reap the benefits of that self-care that you're doing. So it's an investment. Invest in yourself to take time for yourself. And that will help in the long run to help better cope with the whole situation that's going on.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. And Dr. Carroll.
Oh, gosh, that's me. Hi. I think my biggest takeaway is is similarly that it is so essential to keep in mind what is important to you, what your priorities are. As members of your care team, what's important to us is what's important to you. And we don't know what that is unless you communicate that with us. And we want you to be able to take care of yourself because it'll allow you to be a better member of your care team. You'll be able to face treatments, with greater strength. And we talk a lot about the importance of keeping the physical body healthy, but keeping your mind healthy is part of that. And you matter so much and you are important. And please don't forget that because your caregivers care about you and what's important to you is important to us. So that's kind of, I sound like a broken record because I tell my patients that all the time, but I genuinely believe it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Ms. Bearden.
I would say, knowing your healthcare team, communicating your questions to them. If you've done some research, don't overwhelm yourself looking on the internet endlessly trying to necessarily find information. Trusting your healthcare team is very important, and building that trust is about communication and knowing that they're hearing you and you're understanding what they're telling you. Trust the process. It's complicated. It's long sometimes, and it's frustrating. We want results quickly, but things take time, and so communication is absolutely essential to helping you feel that peace of mind and reducing additional and unnecessary anxiety and stress.
Thank you. Thanks. And Dr. Fleischman?
Sure. Communication, again, can't hear that enough. Probably one of the best investments you can make to help schedule things is a good paper schedule with boxes for each day, or learning how to use your electronic calendar inside and out is a very good way to help organize things and find out, you know, when you're starting treatment or when you're moving from one treatment to another, find out who to call and how to reach people off hours. So if you have a question, you can get answers.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank all of our speakers. You have been phenomenal today, and I want to thank all of our participants who asked such great questions. And I regret that we were not able to get to everyone's question just because of the number of people on the call today. So I do want to say a few words before we conclude the call. Please realize that you're going to go, for those of you who got to ask a question, please go back to your healthcare team with a question. Remember, you've learned a lot today. So go back to your healthcare team with your question and ask them the question. Remember, they have all their records in front of you, and they know the most about you. Also, we discovered that actually, and I think, and Dr. Wong mentioned this as well, that there are certain times when it's hard to reach a physician. So be sure you know how to reach your physician. During the day, you can usually reach a physician, but evenings and weekends and holidays are often challenging for patients. So please do ask your healthcare team how you can reach them at those times. And again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.